Hello and welcome to the Jayco and SBS Cycling Podcast, brought to you by Jayco, your great escape.
Bonjour, bonjour, bonjour. Welcome to the Jayco and SBS Cycling Podcast, coming all the way from the beautiful town of Gap, which will be the start of tomorrow's stage. But today, Maka, what a absolutely stunner of a stage we have. First of all, welcome again into this podcast. Did you have fun?
Well, a strange day today, as you know. It was and you're probably listening thinking, strange days on the tour are not uncommon. But no, good to be here. Good to be in one piece. I'll quickly run through our day. We dropped my logistical day. We dropped you at the start, which is fine, good. 100-kilometre journey, that's normal on a stage of the tour from the hotel to the start line. We turned around and we drove back that 100 kilometres that we'd just driven to do the off-course route of the stage. So the off-course route was about 300 kilometres.
Yeah.
So we had to do that. We then got stopped at the course because the race was coming. That's okay. We then barged our way through after the race. The gendarme looked the other way, so off we went with a few other cars in tow.
You're learning, Maka. You're learning.
We got to the finish, but we got to the finish 4 kilometres from the finish, so we didn't get to the finish, but the buses were there. So then we waited for interviews and waited for you because you spent the day
because,
in the car.
Because, on the contrary, I had a fantastic day because I spent the whole car in the race with Monsieur Mark Renshaw.
Monsieur.
Alongside Monsieur Sir Cavendish, which we didn't see much actually. But yes, I spent the whole, and you know what? As a treat, the second part of this podcast, so stay tuned because it will be my day with Mark Renshaw inside the Astana car, blow by blow, as it happened. And that's, I think, quite interesting as a journey to take you, the public of the Jayco and SBS Cycling Podcast, inside the race, inside the car. But hey, we have a winner that we like. Carapaz won the stage in very good manners. It was very aggressive attacking. Let's relay again and let's relive again what happened with Mr. Carapaz.
Yeah, brilliant. He's such a class rider. You know, he's won the Giro d'Italia. He's come close previously. And actually, I was almost confused at the end thinking he's already got a stage win when he was away with Mikhail Kwiatkowski.
Yeah, but he didn't.
Quite a few years ago. They rode in together and it was Kwiatkowski. It was decided would go across the line in first place. He finally gets it. First Ecuadorian, massive win. And huge for EF because they've been knocking on the door a few times, and they've had their fair share of bad luck as well throughout this 3-week journey. And it's a real, you know, they've salvaged something now. They're in the winner's circle.
And a tale of two worlds because Kwiatkowski was actually in the last group where I was with Cavendish. Kwiatkowski finished in the last gruppetto, basically, of the Tour de France. So, but on the day Carapaz has his win, it's a good win for EF because they've been attacking left, right and centre at this Tour de France. And for the word of Mark Renshaw, I'm not going to say exact word that he said, but something along the line that maybe now they're going to stop attacking. That would be good for the peloton because they've been attacking a lot.
Well, today was epic, wasn't it? It was, again, that tempo of the first hour or two was just through the roof. We're not surprised. We shouldn't be either.
They've again beaten the most, the fastest estimate time of the Tour de France. They've again beaten them by 5 minutes.
Wow. You mean today or
today,
so far?
Today.
Of course. I mean, it was crazy. And when we got stopped, in fact, I was with about 80 kilometres to go and the race came through. And I never ever generally are on a part of the course and watch the race come through because I have to be at the finish, obviously. But today we didn't have a choice. We got stuck there. So we went, well, we might as well film it and watch them come through. It was through a little village. They were absolutely flying. And at that point, the group of four was still off the front. There was a chase group of about seven, I think. And then the peloton, sort of a minute later, everyone was attacking. Mm-hmm. Well, the group of four were just rotating turns, but everyone behind them, it was just full gas. And it's, you just realise how quick they go these days.
But again, in a group of four, there was a certain Magnus Kurt. But then in the end, it's Carapaz that wins today.
Yeah. And probably to be not discrediting Magnus Kurt, probably, actually, you can't discredit him on a day like today. Probably with the right group of riders, he could win, even though, you know, the climbs. He's not a super climber. But in theory, yeah, it was probably all getting set up for for Carapaz to launch, which he did.
So before we talk about the battle for GC, because it played out again on the climbs of Super Dévoluy, just want a quick mention for Simon Yates. He's done very well, Simon Yates. He was with Carapaz at some point. He actually was ahead. He was leading that stage, and then he got caught out by Carapaz. So Simon Yates, he came good in this stage.
Yeah, he did. He did, and you know, I was gunning for him. I'd love to see him win, and of course, Jerry Ryan, owner of Jayco and owner of Jayco Lula, the team, was here, is here. And they've had a win, but they were they're hunting for more now. Yeah, look, he did nothing wrong, as Kino said in the commentary, Yates. He did nothing wrong, but he was just beaten by a better guy in the end. And Carapaz dropped him on that second to last climb. So the writing was on the wall then. And when we met you at the 4K to go, Mark, I watched them go through, and you could just see the speed and the intent of Carapaz as they went, as he went through that sweeping left-hander. Yates was going too, but Carapaz was on another mission.
What's good about Carapaz, though, as well, is let's also, we said this before on this podcast, but let's rewind back a year. He was in form. He was in shape last year, and then stage one happened, and he had to retire. So there's a bit of a reward this year in him performing so well, but also him having this win.
Yeah, it's you know, and he's the highest paid rider on that team. Jonathan Volders has talked about that. So, you know, they demand victories. And he came here as a GC rider. That hasn't worked out. But, you know, they still want GC guys. If they can't ride GC, they've got to deliver something. So,
but if we are in the business of rewinding, let's rewind 2 weeks and a bit. He was in yellow at some point at this Tour de France. So he's led the GC, a win. So a yellow and a win, this is a complete success for EF, don't you think?
Yeah, it's up there. I mean, it is, but very quickly
should they want more? You always want more.
I mean, unless you're winning the race, then that's the ultimate prize, isn't it? But no, it was, you know, quite some time between drinks, I suppose, you can say. And getting the jersey, you know, wasn't the stage win. So, but, you know, it's still huge. But, yeah, I think for him, successful tour. Successful tour. For the team, absolutely successful. But they totally want more. But now this is, you know, in the third week, they'll go home content.
Yeah.
I think they'll go home content. That's a big, you know, it's a big one for them.
Okay, let's talk about the GC, the battle for the top, for the podium of this Tour de France. Again, happened again. Pogacar, he just couldn't help himself. He had to attack. What do you make of this attack? Because in the end, he got a bit of time on Vingegaard, but bit of time, he's building a little buffer here and there.
I think Pog, I mean, it's these sort of two reasons, I guess. He's just a racer. He just wants to attack his rivals, and he'll give them nothing. Secondly, I think he knows the big days that are coming ahead, which happen tomorrow onwards until Sunday. You know, Sunday's the TT. He's not taking anything for chance. He knows Vingegaard has beaten him in the last two Tour de Frances and, you know, towed him up convincingly. So he knows if he has one off day, he could lose 5 minutes. So I think Pog is still very aware of that. We saw it yesterday. He sprinted in, and we saw it today. He attacked even right at the end again just to take 3 more seconds. So he wants to absolutely maximise his gains, and he said, I will not celebrate until I'm crossing the line in Nice.
And what I love is that moment where Remco attack, and then he just let Vingegaard do the job, and he just sat down and just went, this is your job to chase. He's the one looking after, looking for your seat on the podium.
Well, Vingegaard's risking, he is risking everything. He's risking second place to win. So he is, I think he's sort of decided, Remco attacks, I can't chase. I've got to focus on actually getting the better of Pog. And I think he knew when Remco attacked, he only had so much left in the tank. So he knew he was only going to be able to probably follow Pog. He couldn't maybe match him, or he was probably worried about following him and losing more time. So there's this big tactical game going on. So I sort of, in one part of me likes the fact that Vingegaard is putting everything on the line to still beat Pog, including losing second place. He's won the Tour twice.
Yeah.
I suppose you can argue second doesn't mean a lot to him. And then in the other example, I'm like, it was a little bit silly by Vingegaard letting Remco go and expecting Pog to chase, because of course he's not. You know, Remco's a longer way down and Pog's not too worried about him.
Interesting, and so much again to play. The Aussies today, Jack Hegg came good.
He's been solid.
Yeah, Jack
Hegg, yeah. Look, and we, you know, probably 3 years ago we expected him to challenge for podium or top five. That was totally off his probably radar this year, and we knew at his very best maybe he could, but he's actually just played a real solid role for Buitrago, and you know, I think he should be. I think he's slipped into that role, and he hasn't sort of, you know, he hasn't had a super year, Jack, so he probably knew where he was at coming into it, and he knew that he was, you know, going to play a domestique role, and I think he said that at the start, at the team's prayers or stage one. So I feel like he's relished the role and played, and, you know, and when you do that, as a guy who went there as a team leader, you know, or as a joint team leader when he signed with Bahrain, to have to, you know, lower your colours and say, okay, well, I've got to now work for a guy who's fighting for top 10. I think that's really, really mature and professional.
I was going to say, is it a case of maturity?
Yeah, it is. It's real maturity from Jack, yeah. And he's, you know, the way he's sort of spoken in the interviews as well, he's, that's how he's been.
I saw Driesners a few times today in the Gruppetto and at the back, and but he's there. He's they're not the days where he can fly. It's not the day where he can shine. For someone like Jared Driesners, it's about surviving, I guess, as well.
Yeah, yeah. Days like this, I mean, he's slowly counting down.
I don't think he's slowly counting down. I think he's counting down.
He's fast.
Not so
quickly.
Slowly.
He's quickly, yeah, because the race is going quickly. Yeah, no, he'll. Oh, I think. I don't want to put the kibosh on it, but I'm pretty confident he's going to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty confident.
He's looking fresh.
Yeah, and he seems happy enough at the finish line now, and definitely after that crash, when I thought, oh, gee, he might not make it. You know, I thought he might not start the next day.
Yeah.
I think he had probably a tough couple of days after that. And I think it was the rest day that came. And, you know, now he seems out the other side.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a good story, Jared Driesners. One to celebrate.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, we take a short break and then we will come back. You will be with me in the car with Mark Renshaw.
Ready to take your cycling adventures to the next level? Since 1975, Jayco has been proudly manufacturing in Australia and is the largest name in caravans, pop-tops, camper trailers, hybrids, motorhomes and campervans. With the largest service network in Australia and unbeatable access to parts and accessories, Jayco is here for you. Cycle by day and relax by night with your fully equipped Jayco to keep you out of the elements. Jayco is built here for out there. Visit jayco.com.au to discover the range.
Get the ultimate Tour de France experience with SBS On Demand. Download the app on your preferred device or connected TV to access the Tour de France hub. Enjoy full live coverage, stage replays, extended highlights, mini stage recaps, and bite-sized stage winning moments. It's all available anytime, anywhere, and streaming for free at your home of cycling, SBS On Demand.
So, Micah, as you know, today I spent the day with Mark Renshaw. You know Mark very well.
You've known him for years. He's part of the SBS family now, isn't he?
But yes. Did you ride against him or with him?
I think my last year as a pro, he was just turning pro, or he was about to. We did race against each other a little bit. Mostly in Australia. I'm not sure if we did race against each other in Europe, but Sun Tour or something, and one of those. I think I towed him up actually in a sprint.
Well, he was.
I wonder if he's listening.
He was very kind of inviting me in the Astana car for the day. That's pretty precious. It's not everybody is allowed or can be in a team car for a whole stage. So I was making sure that it was going to be a moment that I would appreciate personally as well, but sharing it with the audience. So here's the day with Mark Renshaw in the Astana car.
177.8 kilometers of racing today. and 148 riders at the start, two non-starters, number 28, number 28, Reinders of Jayco Alula, and number 63, Phil Bauhaus, Bahrain Victorious.
Right, we are just at the start of the stage today in Tour de France. It will be a special podcast today. So we just heard the non-starters and the start of the stage. Thank you for welcoming us. Excited. I'm excited. But for you, it's your day job.
Yeah, it's day 17. So stage 17 today and a complicated stage, actually. Stage on paper looks pretty simple. Flat start, hilly finish. But we're in the third week and now we have a big chance of a breakaway. So our sprint objectives are finished with Mark Cavendish. So now it's all about trying to get Harald Tejada into the break. And how we do that is going to be pretty difficult. We have a strong guy like David Ballerini, who hopefully the plan is we put Tejada in the wheel of Ballerini and he delivers him into the breakaway today.
So we'll follow all this for you on this special podcast and the race will unfold. And wind seems to be quite a big factor today so far.
Yeah, big factor. We've seen 5-6 teams already out of the car with, the wind measuring and checking the wind. The last team we passed was Visma with Moraine Zeman out of the car measuring the wind. And today's a day where if you're a GC rider, very nervous because you cannot get caught out here.
So sadly for Astana, Lutsenko already a little bit in trouble.
Yeah, he's woken up with pain in his knee, so the left tendon. He had a big crash a few days ago, and I think now it's starting to really hit home for Alexei. So it's not looking good already.
Yep, and that's only the start of the stage. More to come.
Alexei Lutsenko.
So Lutsenko is back in the bunch. Good news, I guess, for you.
Yeah, good news that Alexei can come back to the bunch. But it's on one hand, he has big objectives coming up, like after Tour de France, the Olympic Games, and then in the end of the season, big races. So it's catch 22. You really don't want him to hurt his knee more if there is a problem. But you want him to finish the race because we're only a few days from finishing. So. It might need just to be a bit warmed up, but we can see he's back in the peloton now. So fingers crossed that it'll be all right for Alexei. Yeah, we can make space. Christoph can jump in with Tosso, and Lutz can jump in the front.
Okay, Christoph
in the back, we've moved the wheels to the back of the car. Okay, move to him, stop with him, and then we'll change this in the car when we arrive to you.
So sadly, Lutsenko has to retire. It wasn't unexpected for you, though.
No. We knew this morning that the crash was big, and. I think the effects of this crash is just starting to come in now. And on one hand, we're lucky we got to use him for the big objectives with Cav the last few days, but he needs to now prepare for Olympic Games. 500 meters, we turn left, and we have a 300 meters steep. Okay, 300 meters steep, and then flat for another 1.5 kilometers.
Mark, as we stand, we are now 66.3 kilometers from the end. There's still the mountains to come, of course. Let's do a quick update on the race and how you guys are going.
Yeah, look, it's been a very fast start in the race. Obviously for Astana, the big news is that Lutsenko stopped the race. He's had to abandon because of an injury to his left knee after the crash a few days ago. You know, I'm not a doctor, but yeah, I've had enough crashes to know that it's probably due to crashing on his right knee. Now his left knee has started to hurt from overuse, overcompensating for that right knee. But Tour de France race goes on. Currently 3Ks to the intermediate sprint. It's been full gas racing all day and constantly groups jumping off the front of the peloton trying to jump away. So it makes it very difficult for us. We only now have Tejada, who's a specialist in the climbing, and I think he's used all these bullets today. So in 20-odd kilometres, when we come to the Cat 1, we'll probably see... Yeah, we'll see a few of our guys in the Gruppetto, I think.
What's interesting with Dzyuchenko is... you said it was a bit of a tense moment because abandoning, even if you know you have a difficult morning and this could be the outcome, it's never easy. And you said it, you experienced it yourself as well.
Yeah, it's a race you never want to stop. It's, you don't really care when you stop other races because, you know, you're preparing for another race or getting ready for something ahead. But Tour de France, you always want to finish. And, you know, he's a big champion. He's won here in Tour de France. He has big objectives coming, but you could still see, you know, tears in his eyes when you have to stop this race, and it's the same for every rider.
Yeah. How are they going to let everybody here? If something happens with Tinker, what do you do now?
It's idiot.
No, no, they... Okay. Organisation asked for no teams to stop. Come on, Leo.
Mark, we're just on top of the first climb of the day. We're following Mark Cavendish and the crew. Talk to us about what just happened now.
Yeah, so we've hit the first Category 1 climb of the day. Quite a hard climb. So, yeah, look, no reason for Cav to go super deep and stay there. So he's in a nice little group too, Arkea, Kwiatkowski from Ineos. So, yeah, look, these guys are going to ride to the finish together now. They might pick some more guys up along the way, depending on how the peloton race with Pogacar and the next Cat 1. But 32Ks to the finish now. So, look, they can lose anywhere from 35 to 40 minutes. So we should be okay.
When you see the composition of that group, does that reassure you that the time cut will be relatively easy to make?
Not doesn't really matter about the riders with him. We've got Bol and Ballerini with him to, you know, bring him to the finish line. But looking there, you've got Demar, McClay for Arkea, Kwiatkowski. You know, they're all good bike riders. I think Tim Wellen's in there as well. Or maybe he just got across. He did. So, yeah, look, some good bike riders in there.
So the radio we hear, it's a private channel. Explain to us how that quickly works.
So, this is our team channel. So we can chat between the riders and the directors. So, for example, today we're in car two. Car one is behind the race. We're in front of the race. And that was Dmitry Fofanov talking to the riders. So we have every rider has a race radio with them. So we can communicate back and forth. Riders can communicate together between each rider. And then we also have another channel for internal staff use.
And they are all private channels. No other team can listen to your channel.
I'm sure they can scan through and find our channel. But now, this year, we also have an agreement with ASO where our race radio is broadcast. So sometimes, or a lot of the time, you have to focus and remember that the channel's open to the world.
No swear words, eh?
Well, they like to cover those up, but more team tactics. You don't want to give away too much, and I think a lot of the radio messages are obviously they try not to broadcast something that'll influence the race.
Water. What else do you want, man?
Sale.
Sale.
What do you reckon, Carbon?
Cav, can you repeat what you wanted, mate?
I think he pulled out his earpiece when
Give him a Malta. How is he, alright? Take it easy, we've got heaps of time.
Mark, we are towards the end of the race. Thank you for having us in your car. It's been fantastic. Fantastic to see the stage from the inside.
Yeah, welcome along. It is. We didn't know how exciting it would be today, but end up being pretty exciting. And look, there's races within races, and you got to see the race with Gruppetto today. And yeah, it's been exciting.
So that was my day with Astana in the Astana car and Mark Renshaw following Cavendish. But Cavendish, I didn't see that much. He only came once at the back of the car to get his own bottle. Everything else was done by the domestic. So that gave me a good insight of how much domestic actually do a lot of hard work.
Yes.
And dangerous work. There's a lot of cars in this pack, in this Gruppetto at the back. So no, domestic have to navigate backwards through the cars.
What do you think surprised you the most from the perspective of the team car?
The fact that the level of communication going on.
Yeah. Okay.
And tiny bits of communication. It doesn't really show too much on the audio that we just had. But you could see Mark is on Velo Viewer and he would detail almost meter by meter what will happen to the riders.
What's coming up,
and 100 meters turn right and sharp right. And that, for me, was really an eye-opener. And then, like I said, the work the domestic do to bring up and down the drinks and whatever the riders did. Well, no jacket today because it was very warm, but yeah, the ice pack and that sort of thing. And the way they navigate backwards, so they let themselves drop into the pack of cars, but Astana car wasn't the first car. So they had to navigate and make sure they were not hit by cars on the way down and on the way up. So
yeah,
that was quite astonishing. And that let alone the speed as well they go when you do the bottle drop. I didn't do the bottle. I was next to Mark when he did the bottle, but that goes, they were going really fast. Even though it was a little bit uphill, they was going very fast.
Sticky bins, yeah, maybe, just to, you know.
That I was not allowed to film. No, I'm kidding.
We won't go there.
Everything was fine.
Yeah, everything was good above board. Yep, yep.
Anyway, big stage again tomorrow. Stage 18 coming up. We're going to Barcelonnette. We start in Gap, where we are now already ready to be at the start of that stage. Gap is a beautiful city at the footsteps of the big mountains. But Barcelonnette also is a beautiful city. We've been there before, many, many times before. What can we say about that stage?
What have we got? Well, I'll tell you what we've got. 179 kilometres. Gap, by the way, sits at 900 metres above sea level, or just shy of 900 metres, in fact, 850. So we're reasonably high in terms of our starting point of the day altitude. Then it is, and I won't give the kilometres just yet, but there's a Category 3, Category 3, Category 3, Category 3, Category 3. So five Category 3s, one intermediate sprint, which again is, you would think, will be hotly contested. The intermediate sprint comes after the two Category 3s. It is breakaway, breakaway, breakaway. I cannot see the GC guys fighting this one out because they're only Category 3s, but it's also not a day for the sprinters. That is guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
So this is breakaway big time. So again, the usual suspects, the Ben Healy's from EF, Jake Alula, they're on the hunt now.
We could have seen this today.
Yeah, they come close today. They only just missed the target. This is potentially a Michael Matthews day.
Mm-hmm.
He's up and about, and that's what the guys are saying at Jake Alula. So,
and he dropped today. So
yeah.
So that could also be a sign of him going, I'm not going too hard because there's a
good stage tomorrow. I think it was him and a few of them did the job for Simon Yates because they knew how hard it was at the end of the stage. So he played a role today, so he should feel good about himself there. And this is really, I think it really is a good day for Michael Matthews.
Yep.
But there's, you know, as Jack Haig said in an interview post-stage, there's half the peloton that want to race Yeah, this stage, is the best bike riders in the world. This is what they train for. This is what they aspire to do. So when you get to stage 18 or 17, you think, oh, three quarters of the peloton just want to get the race done. No, no, half the peloton are still ready to race for the win.
And the number of wins available are not going bigger. They're diminishing very quickly.
Yeah.
So absolutely should be a very entertaining stage.
I think it'll be full gas. First climb comes after 32 kilometres. As I said, we start at 850 metres. It doesn't go up much. It's only 4 kilometres, but it is at 6.3%, and it goes up to 1,400 metres altitude. So it's launch pad for a breakaway.
It's all to play for, and it will be on SBS, of course. Thank you, Maka.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Jayco and SBS Cycling Podcast, brought to you by Jayco, your great escape.